sex positivity, of course, is not defined by how much sex we're having.
I definitely felt pressure to lose my virginity.
If sex isn't perfect, then my whole relationship is worthless.
Eating ass and like threesomes and orgies and sex parties.
Open it up and oh my God, I thought I was sex positive. No.
You can be sexual in your relationship every single day without like swinging from chandeliers for 3 hours, right?
I was like, going to say cartwheeling onto a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not doing that. Not today anyway.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Dee Selman, and this is the Hookup Podcast where we talk all things love, sex, dating, relationships. Normally on a Tuesday, I'm sitting here on this couch, if you're watching, together with Pip Rasmussen. Pip, still in Europe, gorgeous, gorgeous girly, living her best life. I got a DM yesterday. I think she's in Albania. She was wearing a very, very small bikini, as she should, and all I could see was crystal blue water. So to say I'm jealous is an understatement. Anyway, we have been having co-hosts jump into the seat for the 6 weeks that she's away. We've heard from Lauren French. We've heard from Ben from The Grill. And today I have the pleasure of sitting across from Laura Lee, who you would have, if you listen to The Hookup quite regularly, probably heard on the show. But Laura, for anyone who is maybe listening for the first time, tell us a little about yourself.
Thanks. Well, thanks for having me. I've seen this photo, by the way, of Pip.
Oh my God,
I'm with you.
It's one of the most beautiful. I was like, babe, if you're not gritting that,
yeah,
that's 100%. Not a story post.
No, it's not a story post. We can confirm. So my name is Laura. My pronouns are she, her. I live down the coast. I'm really lucky to live down the Surf Coast here in Victoria. I work as both a psychologist and sexologist. So I see individuals and couples and it's the best. I love it. I get to talk about like what we're going to talk about today. I get to talk about this stuff all day. It's great.
I know. And you're so wise, which is why it's awesome to have you. So the episode that we're going to get into today is actually something that you wanted to talk about. Tell us about it and why you wanted to do this topic.
Yeah, it is. I'm always kind of keeping an eye out on what I'm noticing from my clients, like what I'm hearing from my clients, what's going on for them. And something I'd been hearing more about lately was this idea of sort of sex positivity fatigue, like that it seems to have created some new pressure for people, some new angst for people. And I've been really curious to dive into it. I have been researching it for a while now. I've been so curious to understand it more. And I knew you would kind of love it.
Yeah, I was so intrigued by this because I don't think we've ever covered this topic. And we're going to get into this, but as a show that I would say is extremely sex positive, and that's exactly what we do, I'm starting to get a bit like in my head about like, wait, are we now part of the problem? But yeah, we'll unpack that in this episode. But we will look at how sex positivity as a movement has potentially created, this is what we want to explore, new expectation or pressure to perform in sex. So in this app, we'll hear your thoughts on if you've ever felt that pressure to maybe have a certain type of sex, whether that's a lot of it or like kinks or just be highly sexual in general, where this pressure comes from, how you feel about hookup culture, the impact of porn, but also we want to talk about what idealistically, what sex positivity should actually look like.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot to unpack. Let's get into it. So I think it's worth defining sex positivity before we get into it. And to do that, we need to, I guess, like fast track a little bit of the history, because you might be, you know, maybe 18 years old and you're like, but wait, everything's always been, you know, really sex positive. What are you talking about? No, this is not the case. It was only in the 70s, I think, when the contraceptive pill kind of became a huge thing that casual sex really became normalized, especially for women. It was kind of frowned upon before. And so, yeah, together with that and then like the 70s kind of hippies, sex positive movement, years went by. Then there was like the college campuses in America and dating apps, and then hookup culture has just become so normalized now, which has really destigmatized casual sex. Together, I think, with social media, which has played such a huge part in sex positivity and talking about things that probably haven't been talked about previously. But yeah, how would you define sex positivity?
Yeah, I think you've touched on some really important points there in our relatively recent history, which I think is really important to highlight. I think there are three main things that sex positivity does really well that are like I love about sex positivity. The first is this real destigmatizing, this like dismantling of shame that has plagued sexuality. The second thing is it really centers education, which is obviously again part of our public discourse, but also relatively new to think about sex through an education lens. And the third thing sex positivity emphasizes is communication, which, as you're saying there, about media, about the hookup, right? It's what you do here, having these really open dialogues about sex that are inclusive and consider the experience and voices of everyone.
Exactly. And so we are absolutely not saying sex positivity is bad. No. It is 100% what we do yeah. here at The Hookup. It is so important. It's why we have so many incredible conversations with you all the time, trying to destigmatize and, you know, make people feel a lot less shame around sex. We put this on our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup, and we asked you, do you think we've become too sex positive? And most of you said no.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that at all. Like, yeah. Not just because of your audience and the work you do here, but because of how early days this journey of sex positivity is. So these conversations that you're having here, these really rich, inclusive, diverse voices, diverse experiences, this is still relatively new in our public discourse. We're talking last few decades at best.
I think it was 22% of you said, we're actually not sex positive enough.
Oh, wow. Love to hear that.
Yes. Yeah. So that's, I think, a bit of a temperature check of where we're at, right? It's like, yes, we've made huge leaps and bounds when we think about destigmatizing conversations around sex and normalizing casual sex so much that it's almost the expectation for young people. Mm. But yeah, this ep isn't going to really be about like sex positivity in the fact that like, are we too sex positive or like, are we not enough? It's more about like where we're at now, has this created a culture where some people are feeling a little bit of pressure or a lot of pressure to maybe perform or participate in a sexual culture in ways that they don't really want to.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really important to, you know, critically examine a movement like sex positivity and recognize that for all the good that it does, what else could it be kind of injecting into our society, particularly because we're so new on this journey.
Exactly. And this was something that we heard from you. We asked you on our Instagram, we said, if you have felt the pressure to perform beyond your boundaries, nearly 40% of you said yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a lot of people, right?
That is a lot of people. Yeah. So I think what we'll do now is, yeah, let's hear from you and find out in what ways you felt that pressure and where you think it's coming from. Manny says, as a male, performance anxiety has been a huge issue for me. Chloe says, I often compare myself and feel inadequate, like I should want and / have more sex than I'm actually having. Mm. Tash says, I'm single, a female. I have a high sex drive, but still get sex shamed by some males for enjoying multiple partners. And this is a voice memo from Indy talking about the pressure that she feels.
Coming from a bi woman in a straight passing relationship, I feel like society just puts so much value on sex above everything else, to the point where when my sex life isn't perfect, I end up just feeling like there's something wrong with me, and I end up doubting the worth of my whole relationship. Despite the fact that me and my partner are so happy and so in love, with all the hate and all the struggle you hear coming from so many women in straight relationships, I just feel so much pressure. If I don't finish or if things are met, I just feel like I'm missing out on some huge, incredible thing, and that it's my fault because I'm choosing to be with a guy instead of a girl. I feel like I'm letting myself down, and I feel like I'm letting him down too, because I just had this anxiety telling me if sex isn't perfect, then my whole relationship is worthless.
Oh, my heart.
I know.
Listening to that. Oh my goodness.
What are your thoughts?
I think that's, you know, really at the, really speaks to the heart of why we wanted to have this conversation today, right? Is that I hear there's so much pressure, but I also heard, not just in the voice note, but in some of the other ones you read out, this like abundance of comparison, because now sex is something to achieve, perform, aspire to do a certain way, and that it means something really big if I get there or I don't. And it's so easy to compare now and to compare ourselves unfavorably. Like, there's so much information out there, you don't have to look far ever to compare ourselves unfavorably.
Exactly. And I think that if you are young and everyone around you is on the dating apps and swiping and hooking up and having casual sex, especially in your friend group, like, you can feel that pressure. That's what Matt said. He said he feels that pressure from his friends sometimes. Some can really make you feel quite down about not being part of hookup culture. In general, though, I'm quite anxious around sex, so the current culture probably works against me there. John's saying, very often I feel inadequate asexually pleasing my queer girlfriend. And Philip says, it's not actually his friends, it's more about the jealousy of his partner's past relationships.
Me and my now partner, we met on a dating app, and it started out just like regular hooking up and hangouts. I started to develop
feelings for her like really early on, but it just like wasn't the right time. She had just come out of like a long-term relationship. She was just enjoying being single. We would talk about the people we were hooking up with. It was just kind of like, oh, we're both single, like let's just have fun together. And then the feelings kind of got like deeper and deeper. And after the honeymoon phase, I guess, of the relationship, I just kind of like started to spiral like out of control about how many guys she was sleeping with. Like, cause she had told me before we were together, the rough number of how many guys she had slept with. And I was like, damn, that's like a lot more than me. At the time I was just like, ah, oh, cool. Like go get it, girl. But after developing these like really deep feelings, it kind of like brought out like this insecurity in me later on. This like post jealousy and insecurity kind of kicked in and it was like really intense. I had to really work through that.
It's a real hard one.
Yeah, I actually can so hard relate to this too. Like I would consider myself hugely sex positive, of course, but I remember when I first started dating my partner now, who I am just like obsessed with. I think he's just the hottest person on the planet. And it brought out all this insecurity in me earlier in the relationship when we would talk about his previous kind of sexual experiences. And in my mind, like our mind can be just the worst for this stuff. Like in my mind, all these previous sexual experiences he had were just with the most, you know, they were just the most adventurous, hottest, spiciest events that I was like, I can't compare. And I really was in my head about it in a way that I had never experienced before. It was so interesting that something I felt so positive about and would like in that voice note, this like get a girl kind of vibes. And now I'm like, oh, now I'm not feeling good in myself. Where did this come from? How did this happen?
Yeah. And like, am I quote unquote performing in a way that, you know, previous partners have with them? Like, am I as good as other people?
Yes.
I remember feeling this so hugely. When I was 18, I hadn't had sex before, like properly. And my first boyfriend was someone who had, I don't even know, it was like 50, 60. Like I heard like so many, he'd had sex with so many people. And so, yeah, when I like first had sex with him and then we were dating, like I felt so much anxiety around the fact that like this was my first time, but he was quote unquote so experienced. And yeah, I think sometimes like a lot of our anxiety around or that pressure to perform during sex does come from thinking about the fact that everyone around us is like potentially having a lot of sex with lots of different people and gaining this experience. Mm-hmm. And I think like even in my situation where I was quote unquote a virgin, you know, I hadn't slept with anyone before, like that in itself can cause a lot of pressure. Like I definitely felt pressure to lose my virginity because everyone around me, like all my best friends had. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like I was 18, but everyone I knew had sex except for me. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think that is a unique, different pressure in itself. And this was something that Bella sent us a voice memo about.
I have dated one person in the past and we did not have sex because I wasn't comfortable. I was also only 15. Now that I'm older, all my friends have all had sex. They've talked to me about it and I'm like, yay, go them. But because I still haven't done it, I'm kind of scared. What if I mess up, do anything wrong? And I know that there's nothing to be scared about, but it's just that anxiety of just like the what ifs. I don't know if it's going to go well, if it's going to go wrong, and that all just really scares me.
Yeah, it's like I really feel for you, Bella. Like I 100% related to that. And it's really tricky when, yeah, we live in a world that everyone's kind of having casual sex and hookup culture. And even for those who potentially are like in their late 20s or even older.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they feel like they're a late bloomer. This was something that Tim sent us a voice memo about.
I'm in my mid to late 20s now. And this is the first time that I'm like dating to date, but I'm also like a late bloomer. And so I'm trying my best to, you know myself and my body in that way. But I understand and recognize the BS of the typical straight dude nowadays and on how horrible they made dating. And that can be, you know, that's an onion with layers. It's, you know, it's anxiety inducing because I'm trying to explore, but I'm also trying my best to do it respectfully, but also take charge. But I don't know when that take charge is. I feel like I'm late in life because I was never presented as masculine. I was never told to be masculine growing up and people would never think of me as masculine. And now everywhere I go, I'm being told of one definition of masculinity, then I'm being told another definition, and this and that for men and women both sides, and how a man should be this, from the men and women in the manosphere and the women that think that men should be providers, but still be nurturing, but still you need to have money. But hey, if you don't have money, you need to be kind. But if you are poor, you need to be kinder than the rich man. So it's like, it's all over the place. And I'm still trying to be attuned with my body and my soul. My body for sex and my soul for romance.
I don't know where to begin. I feel that spiral. I feel it felt like a real spiral. It's like there's so much expectation coming from so many different places. And I feel like Tim makes such a good point of it being like really gendered, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And how our kind of discourse around sex positivity creates these, really unique gendered pressures and experiences for people. But I think that's a really important point too, that sex positivity is framed as this individual choice and whatever each person wants to do, but we cannot ignore the fact that is occurring within a really like a broader context. You know, I think about the impact of patriarchy and of capitalism and of just this moment in history that we're in, you know, of fascism and rolling back of rights. And to position sex positivity as purely an individual choice is not possible. It's not possible in that broader context.
Yeah. And when we think about the expectations based on how you like present yourself gendered wise, like I think we see for women, there's this expectation that, you should have a lot of sex, but not too much sex, right? Like we see all the people talking about body count and that kind of thing. But then it should like almost like you should be masturbating heaps and buying vibrators, like the amount of like vibrators you see in your feed sometimes. Yeah. And it's kind of been framed as like self-care, which is like so important. And these are like such important conversations. But yeah, if you aren't doing all of those things, you might be scrolling and being like, oh, wait, like I don't feel like I fit in to the expectation of my gender when it comes to the type of sex I should be having.
Yeah, and also how I'm treating it. Am I treating sex as a wellness project, and am I giving it that emphasis because now I'm getting told that sex is really important for my health and my well-being? And so now there's all these new pressures around, am I, as you said, performing this in the way I'm supposed to for my gender, which can look like I'm supposed to be investing a lot of time and money in these products and these activities, and if I'm not, what does that now mean?
Yeah, which I think extends to like dating apps and hookup culture in that sense, that like if everyone's on dating apps and everyone's hooking up and everyone's like having sex in that way, then of course you're going to feel that pressure. And this was something that Hannah sent us a voice memo about.
As someone who has been in a relationship since 18, now 26, my experience with hookup culture and sex talk being so prevalent has been these kind of questions and doubts that come about when there's so much talk around having a roster, having a hoe phase, and being single in your 20s to find yourself, and like a big part of that being engaging in hookup culture. It can kind of bring in these thoughts of, am I missing out on some sort of key experience, or like, am I boring for never having engaged in this hookup culture and having casual sex? And then when it comes to like in-person interactions with friends who are deeply involved in hookup culture and casual sex, and a lot of what they have to talk about is kind of their stories of hooking up with people, who's on their roster, all that jazz, those conversations can feel kind of awkward, I guess, when that concept is so foreign to you. As someone who's never engaged in that world, it can just be a little tricky, and like, I don't know how to contribute to this conversation.
I definitely feel like, the brunch with the girls, you know what I mean? It's like everyone's, when you're all single and everyone's talking about like who they just hooked up with, or like, the roster, or like maybe they've just come out of a relationship. I feel like sometimes you hear friends, like if you've just gone through a breakup, everyone being like, quick, get into your hoe phase, or I'll help you set you up with someone, or let's go out clubbing, let's try and find you someone, you know?
Yeah. I think there can be this real pressure of like, if I'm sex positive, it means I kind of need to be up for everything. Like I'm kind of up for anything and open to anything. And yeah, if I don't want to have a hoe phase, or if I don't want to have casual sex, then how do I reconcile that with still being sex positive? I think can be a really challenging question for people. Sex positivity, of course, is not defined by how much sex we're having. In fact, sexuality is not defined exclusively by the sex we're having. But I think it can get really tangled up into this sense of pressure of like, what does it mean if I'm doing or not doing these things?
Yeah. And hookup culture, like Hannah said, play such a huge part of that, right? When I think research shows like we are now more single than ever generationally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that means a lot more people aren't having sex consistently with the same person. Yeah. So we asked you, has hookup culture as a whole been a positive or a negative? Mm-hmm. On our Instagram, 26% of you said positive. 34% of you said negative.
Wow.
And 40% of you said neutral.
Okay. Not a lot of positive.
No. More negative than positive, which is really interesting. Mm. Beth saying there's way more pressure to try things in casual hookups. Like, what the fuck? These things need safety and boundaries. Eve saying if we were truly sex positive, people wouldn't feel forced to lean into hookups and kinks. But then, yeah, some of you disagree and you think hookup culture has been amazing. Sarah saying casual hookups after leaving an emotionally abusive relationship has been great for my confidence. Georgie saying, makes me more comfortable about respecting my limits and exploring. And Nicole saying, the hookup culture has made talking and exploring sex so much more positive for me. And we also got this voice memo from Erin.
I found casual dating had a positive place in my life after ending a really long-term relationship that was very vanilla and had started when we were in high school. Casual dating was then a place to explore kink that I had never heard about, let alone never realized if I'd wanted to try. Casual dating takes a little bit of the pressure off, as long as you feel safe to say, well, if I didn't enjoy this, if I didn't really enjoy this person, I don't have to see them again. And there isn't that much pressure to do so. And it also led to the online dating that let me find my fiance. And we're so happy with our relationship now. And I know what I like and I can ask for what I like, helping him discover what he likes. I know a lot of people have a really negative experience of casual dating, but for me, it had quite a useful purpose.
What do you think about dating apps, Laura, in the sense that they've potentially enabled easier communication to create a culture that almost allows experimentation, right? And I guess the ability to try anything and also match with anyone that would be into what you're into? Or do you think it's kind of created an expectation? Where do you sit with dating apps?
Where do I sit with dating apps? That's such a big one. I'm sure that individual user experience is going to vary widely. And I'm also sure that you can find loads of stories of people who've had wonderful experiences and loads of people who have not. I do really like, you know, some of the messages that you were sharing there where people have talked about like it being a wonderful opportunity to practice some of these skills. And I think if you are well equipped to manage your boundaries and articulate them, and if the experiences have, of course, been safe, I think if you've had those experiences, they really can offer a wonderful opportunity to practice some communication skills, practice asking great questions, practicing listening, practicing noticing what your own body likes. I do love that for people. I think what's equally important is the meaning we give to people, the meaning we give to the experiences people are having, whether they're doing that or not. And I think that's where it can get a little bit twisty for people if it starts to feel like if I'm not participating in that way or if I don't want to, that means something bad, or it means I'm missing out, or it means I'm not participating in this culture that all my friends are in and now I'm left out or I'm ostracized. That's not what we want for people. So whilst they've played a really wonderful role for people in lots of different ways, it's the meaning that gets loaded onto those experiences that I kind of start to listen for and that I hear from my clients, that it means something if I'm not participating in this way.
Yeah. And when, you know, there's so many different apps that exist out there for so many different types of people who want different things. Like, that can also open your eyes, right, to being like, oh, I never even thought that I'd be into this, which is something that Russell sent us a voice memo about.
A couple of years ago when I was single, I was chatting to a lady on Tinder and she mentioned an app called Field. And I thought, what the hell? I'll go check it out. Open it up and oh my God, I thought I was sex positive. No. There were acronyms for acronyms. There were people of I don't know how many different types of sexuality. It was such an eye-opener. So much fun.
So much fun. I love that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like we definitely are destigmatizing more and more now.
Yeah.
Like the opportunities for people to match with all different types of people who are into all different types of things.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel like there's as much stigma or maybe shame as there once was, which is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. And I think an app like Field has just done such a wonderful job of making it so okay, more than okay. I mean, Russell said like how fun it was. It's so great to be able to put your desires out there, put your preferences out there and be met with people who are interested and curious and accepting and want to know more about you. Like that is such a beautiful example of where sex positivity can really come alive in such a wonderful way. I love that.
Yeah, and not to mention for people to be able to explore like their queerness potentially or their sexuality in a way that they might not have been able to before if they were, you know, starting to discover that they might potentially not be straight. Mm. We got a really interesting voice memo from Katie, who has a perspective of, I guess, like the pressure that some people feel or the type of sex that people are having based off of being quite young and inexperienced. Mm-hmm. And this is something that she's kind of learnt as someone who's sleeping with younger men.
I am a 45-year-old woman and pretty much exclusively for the last 2 years have been dating men younger than me, anywhere from 5 to 20 years younger. The feedback I've had from these younger men about why they enjoy dating an older woman is that older women tend to be a lot more comfortable with the messiness and reality of sex, that it's not perfect, that it's about the human connection. You know, bodies make noises and things aren't all gorgeous and porny and stunning. I've heard from quite a few of these younger men that they sleep with younger women and find that the younger women are really performative and really busy looking at their own angles and making sure that they look great or they sound good or they're saying exactly the right thing or they're trying to preempt what the guy is going to want instead of just being really caught up in the moment and just enjoying that, you know, the messy, gritty, craziness of sex. A lot of the guys that I have spoken to about this have been really saddened by younger women not enjoying sex for the real human connection point that it can be and the fun, and that they see it more as just a way to sort of act, which is just such a shame.
Camille, our producer, had some thoughts when she was editing this and recording it. Do you want to come and share them?
Camille, tell us.
Oh, I'm just coming back in.
I do want to come and share them. Hang on, let me get comfy.
Yes, get in here. Yes.
I'm never on this side of the camera. Yeah, I was disappointed by Katie's response. It... As a 24-year-old who lost my virginity quite late, I lost it at 20, 12% of women lose their virginity between the ages of 20 and 24.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the minority. And I, at that time, felt so inexperienced. I'd barely even kissed a guy. I felt so unwanted and I felt so much pressure to lose it because all my friends had lost their virginity. And so putting that pressure on myself, I put myself in risky situations to lose my virginity. I lost it to an Italian pizza man, like a porno.
Wow.
Knocked on my door with my margarita.
Is this true?
This is
wow.
True.
Yeah. I love this.
But not the best way to lose your virginity because he didn't speak English. Anyway, lack of communication there. But what Katie said about young women choosing to perform or choosing to act, it upset me because our sex education is so limited. We aren't told how we're supposed to be pleasured. And what we're taught is what the boys that we're having sex are teaching us. And what they're being taught is through porn. So what all that we understand before we get to experience our sexuality, explore and I guess learn from ourselves is the narrative that we're told. So, and there's also that cultural element of like the males being in charge. There is that physical and social dynamic where they are in power. And so when you are having sex with them, when you don't have the experience, you just kind of go along with it, maybe out of fear, maybe out of shame, maybe out of just not knowing what to do. And so, yeah, I was just disappointed by Katie's response because as a woman, I would hope that she would have understood that experience. Those young men that she's sleeping with also are intimidated, also don't know what they're doing because they are just as young as the young girls. So, yeah, I was disappointed by that. And I think there needed to be a little bit more respect involved because we are all just learning and we don't know what's involved.
Yeah. We all, it's true. It's like the way that we learn about sex, we can't not acknowledge that, like, for most people that does come from porn because the sex education you've had has been with a condom on a banana here in Australia. Yeah. And so, yeah, you kind of look to the culture, right, to learn, or your just experience with having sex and then gaining experience over time and learning what works and what doesn't, or having conversations with your friends and that kind of thing. So We love it, Camille. Yeah. It's good to get, no, because I think, like, you know, I fully agree with you and I fully relate to that experience, but like, you know, I'm not in my early 20s anymore. And so, yeah, I think it's worth having that perspective of someone who's like, I'm out here trying to navigate that and it's hard. What do you think, Laura?
Yeah, I think it you know, I really understand Camille, your response, and we can't critically examine the impact of sex positivity without acknowledging that it's happening in this broader cultural context where we've all grown up with these kind of scripts and stories about sex and gender and our role. And, you know, my own experience of performing sex is something that I've really only dismantled truthfully in the last couple of years, and I'm in my mid-40s now and have talked really openly before about the fact that I only even stopped faking orgasms in the last sort of 5 years or so. Like it's a relatively kind of new and ongoing journey, even for someone like me, even in my job, to kind of be trying to unlearn and let go of some of these scripts around sex being something to perform and do well and centering the penis and all of these kinds of scripts that we've grown up with. So to reconcile being a sex positive person with someone who's also still kind of consumed these scripts, consumed these ideas, is still work for me. And so I'm filled with empathy when I hear the experiences of the people we've heard from today, and I hear this obviously every day in my own kind of from my own clients, that we are all trying to do the best we can, having internalized some really kind of problematic and unhelpful scripts for a really long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that stuff, it can become quite ingrained. Like, we know that research shows the average age that a boy watches porn is 11 years old. And so I think that, if this is all you've kind of learned and you've watched and maybe you're not really talking about it with your friends, then of course you're just going to intimidate what you see, right? And this is something that you sent us voice memos about when you've noticed it in your own sex lives. And Eloise sent us a voice memo about that.
Some men definitely feel the pressure of performing, and porn plays a big part in that by making it seem like we as straight women are all into these crazy performances. I'd been seeing a guy casually for a while and we were planning a weekend away. He asked me if I would be willing to reenact a porn video he had seen where she was wearing activewear and he basically tears it off her. I said no, because not only did I not want to destroy my expensive activewear, but it was so unlike how we usually had sex and would have felt so fake and performative that I just wasn't into it. And I know for a fact that it would have been really awkward because it just wasn't him either. But he obviously got caught up in what porn said was a fun way of having sex with someone. He was cool with me saying no, and we had the conversation about why, but it was still so out of pocket that I was a bit shocked at the beginning.
I love that she was able to say no.
Yeah, you know? I do too.
Because I think I probably would have, like, back in the day, would just felt that pressure and been like, oh, I don't be vanilla. Like, I remember, like, I just always would, like, deal with choking, which, you know, is strangulation. And we know now, having done episodes on the hookup, like, how dangerous that can be. But because it was so normalized in porn, I was just like, oh no, this is just what we all do, even though I didn't actually enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of us have probably kind of conflated these ideas of being a sex positive person or an open-minded person might mean engaging in some things that I haven't critically examined if I actually truly want them, or am I just told I want them, whether that's from porn or from my friends or whatever it is. Am I just supposed to be up for this when actually maybe I'm not up for it. Maybe that doesn't give me pleasure.
Yeah, and I think the same thing can be extended to kink, because we did an episode around fake DOMs, which you should absolutely go and listen to. It was really, really good. And we heard from a listener who basically said, like, yeah, she hadn't really had sex before. It was like the first person she had sex with, but he had DOM in his profile. And he was kind of putting her in all these positions that were really painful, and she wasn't really enjoying herself, but she just thought, like, oh no, this is just like,
this is
what you do, right? Yeah. And like, clearly you're a sex positive person, and you're just like, well, I don't know, this is like sex.
Yeah.
This is kink, and this is what it means to be a dom, which we absolutely disproved. But yeah, we had this really interesting point from Jasmine around that.
When I first got into the kink space, because I didn't really realize that you can be kinky without needing to enjoy pain or humiliation, I found myself in a few situations where I was getting to know people to dominate me. And when they were requesting to do quite hardcore, painful, or humiliating things, and I wasn't into it, I got a little bit shamed for that, of why are you here? Why are you in this space if you don't like to be smacked or hit? And then it took a while after that to discover that I can can actually be really kinky and like a lot of aspects of kinky and being subby without needing to enjoy pain or want pain. And I can have that boundary in place of, I don't want you to hurt me.
Love that journey for her, though, that she's gotten to that place and realized it. But yeah, I just like, I have to be really honest, even doing this show, because I've interviewed so many people, we've done so many episodes on like eating ass and like threesomes and orgies and sex parties, and like I absolutely love it, right? Like that's why I work in this space. I find it also fascinating, and like one of my biggest life missions is to destigmatize anything to do with sex. But I do sometimes feel that pressure to be like, oh, am I too vanilla?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff that I talk about in the show, like I'm not into, but I just like talking about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that too, very much. I feel that. I have conversations about all sorts of things every single day. And then sometimes I might also not feel like having sex. There might be periods in my life or in my relationship where it's not front of mind, and kind of reconciling that with like, oh, what does that mean? I notice a little niggly voice somewhere inside of me being like, you should, or you better.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, unpacking that and being aware of that and unpacking that is, I don't know, I think it's ongoing work, right?
Absolutely. Mm. And we asked you on our Instagram, have you felt ashamed that your sex life is too vanilla? 40%, basically 40% of you said you are.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that huge?
That is huge.
So 40% of us feel that pressure that we are too and ashamed that our sex life isn't like, I don't know, frisky enough or adventurous enough, and that we're too vanilla. Candy sent us a DM and said, I was concerned when I first met my husband that I wasn't quote unquote fun enough. But once we talked about it, he assured me we have open communication about what works and what doesn't. Our friends groups are very private about that, so there's no comparisons. Mm. So yeah, if you are scrolling and you're seeing like OnlyFans stars maybe in your feed, or like the latest vibrators or sex toys, and then you're seeing people, couples maybe even your feed, talking so openly about their sex lives. Maybe you're watching porn. Maybe you're listening to this pod, you know? Like there are so many ways that you might be consuming ideas about sex and then being like, oh, God.
Yeah, and then certain things become aspirational, right? This is where it can become performative again. It becomes something to achieve. Am I kind of kinky enough, or are we doing, like, how's our relationship structure? I hear this a lot around non-monogamy, of it being, like, aspirational and something to do really well, and if I'm not, what does that mean? So I hear this a lot, actually, more and more from clients, this idea of, like, I need to be doing something to an extreme. You mentioned their vibrators too, right? I've had people kind of even be sheepish if they feel like they don't have enough vibrators, or they got a vibrator too late. Like, oh, I've only been using a vibrator for this long. I only own two vibrators, as if it's like I'm underperforming in the sex toy category. I need to be doing it more. I need to have a newer toy. I need to have a wilder toy. I need to have a toy cupboard or a toy wardrobe.
My God,
like,
yes.
Like, it's almost like no matter what we're talking about here when it comes to sex, there's an opportunity, unfortunately, for us to feel like we're not doing it well enough.
That is so true. That is so true. I think it's also just how we're wired, right? What's really fascinating is that research shows there's absolutely no link between quote-unquote spicy sex and higher satisfaction.
Yeah.
What works is connection, trust, mutual intimacy that will strongly predict sexual satisfaction.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you would probably see this yourself as a sexologist.
Yeah, definitely. The things that really predict sexual satisfaction are around relational and felt sense, felt experience. And that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be like a long-term relationship. It can be someone you met today, right? But it's about, do I have a sense that this person, you know, that I'm with truly cares about the experience we're having together? They're curious. They seem to acknowledge my experience. Do we have that mutual care for each other? And of course, communication. Communication is always going to be huge, which again, doesn't mean a big D&M necessarily, but can we freely share, and are we curious about each other, and are we meeting each other with warmth, compassion, empathy, safety, all those things?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about how to deal, right? Like if you are feeling this pressure, how do we deal with being able to still be sex positive? And what is real, what should we aim for? Like what does real sex positivity look like? And how do we deal with that, some of those key ideas that we've maybe taken from the sex positivity movement and haven't been potentially for the best, you know? Well,
I think untangling that last part we were talking about here, right, which is that sexual satisfaction is not really related to things like the type of sex we're having, certainly not the frequency we're having, the level of kind of kinkiness or athleticism. Like, none of that is relevant to sexual satisfaction. And I think that's useful to then bring over to this idea of sex positivity. It's not really about the sex that I'm having. I can be a really sex positive person regardless of whether I'm even having sex at the moment. The actual sex we're having, like sexual acts, sex behavior, is really only a small part of our sexuality anyway. So I think it can be nice to kind of untangle that and come up for all of us what sex positivity is actually anchored in. It's probably anchored in some really lovely characteristics like open-mindedness, open communication, acceptance, non-judgment, education, like staying informed and educated. These are going to be elements of sex positivity that I think are going to, number one, be accessible to all of us, but number two, really relieve that pressure of directly relating it to sex acts.
I love that, Laura.
I have found that really helpful. I have found that really helpful personally, really helpful for my clients, but it really grounds me.
When you're judging yourself a bit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this idea of keeping, if you are in a relationship where you want to keep your culture of sexuality and eroticism alive in your relationship, to not feel that pressure to translate that to sexual behavior, that I can keep that alive by being a couple who go on adventures together, have new experiences together, who flirt, who express admiration and desire for each other. It doesn't have to be an automatic translation to we center sex in our relationship by having it a lot.
Yeah.
We can center sex by being a couple who are also connected to each other sensually. I think there's lots of ways we can keep it alive in our relationship. We don't have to be having a lot of sex all the time. None of us, no one is having a lot of sex all the time.
No, I think that's, I think that's something we've spoken about a lot on the hookup when we've done episodes around like, how often are you having sex? Like every time we hear from people, it's like, it's never as much as you think.
It never is. And that term sex can be super broad. So you can be sexual in your relationship every single day without like swinging from chandeliers for 3 hours, right?
I was
like,
about to say cartwheeling onto a dick.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, we're not doing that. Not today anyway.
Yeah. Laura, I think that's such a brilliant way to end this episode. I think, yeah, it's such an interesting thing for us to be thinking about, especially here at The Hookup. Like, I absolutely love, love, love what we do, and it's so important. But yeah, I think it's worth having this conversation of being like, okay, has like the normalizing of so many different things within sex created a different type of pressure? And I think we've heard that sometimes it has.
Yeah.
So it's really great to hear how we can change those things.
Yeah, and really ground ourselves back in these beautiful ideas of pleasure, of sensuality, of connection.
Absolutely. Mm. All right. Thank you so much as well to everyone who sent us DMs and voice memos. Some of them were, I mean, all of them really, but like, yeah, some of you were really vulnerable in what you shared. So thank you. It honestly means a lot. And we couldn't do this show without you. Thank you for always being sex positive. And yeah, let us know if there's any topics that you want us to cover. Maybe, you know, this convo sparked something and you're like, oh, actually, can you do a whole episode on that? Absolutely. Just shoot us a DM at our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup, and we'll see you next week. Okay, bye.
Bye.